All right, so now we're going to talk about how to fight fair. And it's simpler than you think and more complicated than you think. The first is, let's give the scenario of typical marriage and a typical fight, right? Somebody starts yelling, the other person yells louder, the other person yells a little louder, somebody runs out of the room, somebody slams the door, somebody starts pouting, somebody waits for the other person to come after them, the other person doesn't come after them, everybody starts screaming and yelling again, and we start the cycle all over again. That's in a typical relationship, unfortunately. The idea here is to get to a point where couples can learn how to fight and do it in a way where there's no screaming and no yelling. And the truth is that I say if couples really follow the do's and don'ts, there never has to be yelling in a house again. And I think that's something that's really very important. Okay. There's a number of stages to marriage, and the way you fight in each stage is different. So I guess we have different stages here. How long are people married?
2013 here.
13?
Let me see. It's over 30 years.
Okay.
What's the exact number? I want to send a card.
I'll get back to you.
And when was your anniversary, babe? That's also really
good. You got to bone up on that one.
Over
30.
30?
Over.
Over 30. Okay.
36.
So 36. Wow. So there are different stages, and we don't have any real beginners here. Sometimes it's very interesting when you have the beginners. 36?
It will be, yeah.
Okay, God bless. Keep it going, okay? I'm a 23, and I say also, like, we just gotta keep it going. But at different stages in marriage, you fight in different ways. You don't fight about different things. If any of you think about it, you probably fight about the same things today as you fought about at the beginning of your marriage. How you fight changes, a little bit the nuances change, but the same themes
you
keep
rat bastard.
Oh, no, but just
perfect. Now that Linda's not here, huh?
She was at the top of the stairs.
That was very good.
I give you
very good.
Is this a
hiding
one?
Uh-huh.
Oh, good. Okay. Hey. We're prepared.
Already?
Got your boxing gloves?
Exactly.
We did 3 rounds already.
Okay, so we just started off asking people how long they're married, first of all. How long are you married?
10 and a half.
Okay.
How many hours?
How long are you married?
I'm just kidding.
How long are you married?
It wasn't a trick question. I'm sorry.
17 years.
God, I love how people get confused, you know?
I know my oldest son is 12, so
I do the exact same thing. That's exactly what I do. I know exactly because of my kids. Okay, so we were talking about how in different stages of marriage, there are 5 different stages of marriage, and in each stage we fight differently. We don't necessarily fight about different things. The same themes seem to reoccur again and again, but we fight differently. And part of the reason is that in the early stage of marriage, the couple doesn't really know each other very well. So it's much more you're fighting from your family of origin style than you are necessarily from the marriage style. That's usually not a good thing. And it's a big power struggle. What are we doing in the beginning of stage of marriage? We're struggling for positioning. Who is going to be on top? Who's going to be the stronger one? Who is going to... Oh, these two are going to be trouble. Who is... Get ready. There's role modeling coming up. Who is going to be the one? We jockey for position. So that's what happens in the early stages of marriage. And that's why sometimes you find really almost violent fighting in the beginning or real screaming matches in the beginning of marriage. Then we go to the middle stage where we have young kids. We're trying to build a home, build a career. And during that stage, we're exhausted. I mean, people almost don't have the energy for fighting. And what happens is that there are too many responsibilities, not enough time, lots of expectations, and we end up fighting out of frustration. We end up fighting out of just sheer exhaustion, frustration. This isn't what I thought it was going to be. Things aren't going so well for me. They're going really well for me and not for my spouse. All of those kinds of things. And then just trying to balance finances. During the middle stage of marriage is when we fight the most about finance because there usually just isn't enough and on many levels to go around. So that's, or the priorities are different. So that's the beginning, the middle stages. Then we get to later stage where more you have older children, maybe kids are starting to be married off, the empty nest syndrome, and also people start changing. Women peak in the later stage of marriage. Women come into their own in the later stage of marriage, and men begin their downward spiral. And that's not in a bad, that's not said in a bad way.
But how do you really feel?
I'm going to go upstairs. That's not
when you say a downward spiral, do you mean vis-a-vis what?
Fighting?
The marriage, the relationship, the world, the
power?
Themselves, almost. Uh-huh. Meaning, all the literature shows sexually, hormonally, and in all senses, men peak at age 18, women peak at age 40. Okay? So you've got opposite trends going on with men and women, which is why so often you find that men reach that midlife crisis. Why? Because they're trying to regain youth. Women reach a midlife crisis and say, I need to find myself. You hear women say this much more often than men. I need to find myself, or I'm just coming into my own. And it's a very different path, and that creates a lot of friction, okay? And when I say downward spiral, no one's going anywhere. I just mean that that's a natural, that's what happens. Women tend to age in a much more blossoming way, and men don't necessarily, not, and I don't mean looks-wise, I don't mean anything like that. I mean in their sense of themselves. And that creates a lot of friction. Okay, so what happens? When we have fights as married couples, we tend to bring up everything. In psychology, we call it fighting with the kitchen sink. Okay? We bring up everything. We never stick. We're going, you do that.
No. I just recently learned a different speaker who said that, and it was like very eye-opening.
Right. We tend to throw in everything that ever happened. Okay? So if the fight is about something that happened today, but you never did this and you never did that and you always did this and you always did that. And I'm going to talk about the words never and always and how never and always to use them. But everything gets thrown in. And I never really liked your mother and you were not nice to my mother. And everything comes together. I'm going to say at the outset that is not the way to fight. Because all that does is create frustration. There's no way out of that. There is no way to find any semblance of compromise or peace in that. It ends up having to be a screaming match, and the first person who doesn't like quit and collapse wins. That's all that can happen there. Also, fighting at the later stage, when we get to that later stage, the beginning and the later, tend to get spiteful. We have spiteful fighting, we call it. Lots of name calling, lots of cursing, lots of threats of divorce. The big walking out, not as in a timeout, but as in a walking out, slam the door, and threatening. These are all the ways that couples do fight. And these battle styles, I call them real battles because they are, just leave couples feeling depressed, sad, frustrated, angry, and it doesn't ever bring a resolution. And that's part of why couples fight about the same things year after year after year. Because if you fight like this, there's never any resolution. Then we have types of fighters, okay? And types of fighters means usually we have what we call the vomiter and the retreater.
Excuse me, is there a fifth stage? Because you said five stages.
Oh, I didn't. I only went through three of the stages.
Is the fifth like wings in a nursing home? No.
The fifth stage in the literature is actually called endless love. And the reality is that at that point, couples are not fighting anymore because they're fighting. If they fight, it's because there are medical reasons that they fight, or unfortunately some dementia or other things. But that if not, if they've made it that far, they usually do experience a rejuvenation in the relationship. And you've seen this when you see couples who are married 55 years and things like that, and they're so cute and they're walking around. My husband says not to use the word cute. He goes, cute means old. Don't use that word. My kids said to him the other day, oh, you're so cute. And he was like, oh, God, I'm in trouble. But they are cute. And they look more in love again. And the truth is that they are. Because the fighting and the jockeying for business, that stuff's over. Okay? So in truth, in the last stage, I don't talk about it because really it's not that type of fighting. And if they are fighting, it's medical reasons, usually. Okay. What was I just saying?
The vomiters.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're really listening to that, aren't you?
In our house, vomit is a big thing.
So you have the retreater and you have the vomiter. And this is the case in every couple. It's not always male-female specific. In fact, it's not male-female specific. One person in the couple is always retreating. One person, I don't want to talk about it now, we'll talk about it later. Why do we always have to talk about this? I'm just going to go to sleep, and when I wake up, it'll be over. I'm going to stick my head in the sands. I'm going to leave. I'm going to, whatever it is. And then you have the vomiter, and the vomiter wants to run after the retreater and constantly talk about it. But why did you do that? But I don't understand. But how does that, but let's analyze it. Let's talk about it. If we talk about it, it's going to be fine. Why don't you want to talk about it? I don't understand. We have to talk about it. And constantly is vomiting all over the retreater, okay? Clearly, if any of you are in relationships like this, or we're all in relationships like this, it doesn't work. So we have to learn to be able to stay in one place, talk to each other, and learn to listen to each other so that the retreater doesn't feel like the retreater has to retreat because they're going to get vomited all over. And the vomiter doesn't feel like the vomiter has to vomit because that's the only way to be heard because she or he is chasing the one who's running away. Okay?
Freudian slip.
I said he or she. Yeah, Freudian slip. I'll admit it. Okay. Then we also have the problem solver. Okay? Also not so great. It's the one in the relationship who wants to fix it. Let's not solve it. Let's not nurture it. Let's not do it. Just fix it. Find a solution, tie it up in a ribbon, and make it go away. Now, that is much more male-oriented than female, just because I think males are acculturated to fix things. That's a male trait. So much more we see the men doing that, and the women very frustrated by that process. And the men frustrated by, I want to take care of you. I want to fix it. I want to make it okay. Why are you upset? Nothing I do is ever good enough. Familiar phrase? Anybody ever heard? No? Wow, I'm impressed. Are you lying? Okay. Very familiar phrase in marriage, and mostly we hear it from men. Nothing I ever do is good enough. I try, and it's still never good enough. And that brings us to the last one, where we have the person who's always the trier and the bar lifter, okay? Meaning that one spouse is always trying to make the other spouse happy, but even when they get there, the other spouse lifts the bar and raises the expectation. Well, if you could do this, then really what I wanted was this, or maybe you could try this. Or that wasn't really how I wanted it done. Or it's very nice that you did carpool, but you forgot A, B, C, D, E, F, and G along the way. Or whatever it is, okay? So these are the people, that one sounded familiar, huh? So these are the kinds of situations. These are the kinds of situations, no, it's okay, don't worry about it. These are the kinds of situations that cause fighting in relationships. Okay, so now we know what the dangers of for fighting are. There are lots of models for fair fighting. And the most famous model actually comes out of the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church devised about 25 years ago a model of premarital therapy, which we have very slowly in the Jewish community started to adapt for our community. In the Catholic Church, you cannot get married by your parish priest unless you go to this premarital counseling. They will not marry you. We are trying to adapt that in the Jewish community. Slow process. But one of the things that they focus on very much is fair fighting. As I have a very good friend, actually, who's a nun. We worked together for a very long time. And she said, I don't know if we're doing such a good job because the divorce rate is not really going down all that much. But we're trying. I said, okay, so we're trying too. And as long as we're both agreed that we're trying. Now, these rules for fair fighting are not nuclear physics, okay? You might look at me and say, okay, that's common sense. Yes, a lot of life is common sense, but if we don't learn it and we don't try it and we don't practice it, it actually doesn't happen. So I'm going to give you some of the do's and don'ts, and I'm going to explain what to do. When you leave, I'm going to give you a crib sheet to bring home to your spouse, to bring home to practice, so that you can actually apply this. I want it to be practical. And it's not just something like, oh, I went to a nice lecture this morning. Yeah, she talked about it, but actually how to do it. Because I think that it really does work. It really does. I've been using it for years. And my husband says I've calmed down a little bit. Okay, anyway, so, okay, number one. When you want to discuss something that's upsetting you with your spouse, you always need to use I statements. Now, that may seem very natural. I feel, I think, I. But we don't do that. We say, you idiot. You did this. You did that. How could you have done such and such? Why would you do such and such? And when we do that, we instantly put the other person on the defensive. And the fight is now a battle because the other person has to defend themselves. If I say, I'm really hurt by what happened, well, then my husband can't really say, okay, let's fight about it. In other words, it doesn't make a fight. It starts, when I say, how could you have done that to me? He can right away say, me? What I did? Do you know what you did? And that starts the battle. If you speak about I and you speak about your feelings, then it keeps it away from a battle and it keeps it out of discussion, okay? And also, when you use I statements, you're not destroying the other person's ego. When you always are knocking another person, you destroy their sense of self. And a person with a low self-confidence, a low self-esteem, is not a good spouse. The best spouse is a person who feels good about themselves. I've been a couples therapist for 22 years, and amongst other things. But when couples come to me, the first few sessions, I won't see them together because I need to make sure that they're okay by themselves before I put them in that room together, because otherwise all I'm going to have is fighting in my office. You want to pay me to fight? Go ahead, but I don't think you're going to accomplish anything. You need to be able to feel okay about yourself. So if you only talk about I and you don't point a finger at you, you'll feel better about yourself. Number two, and this is where people start to laugh. When you want to have a fight with your spouse, you should look at each other. You need to try to sit near each other. You need to look into each other's eyes. If possible, and you're not going to kill each other, you should try to hold hands. Or you should try to at least put your hand on some part of their body. And I was going to say, not in a menacing way, because immediately you have de-escalated whatever is going on. And if the two of you contract to fight that way, you won't be screaming and yelling. You're going to be talking. Now, when you first do it, you may be laughing your heads off. And when I ask couples to try this, and when couples do it in my office, they're cracking up. But guess what? They're not fighting when they're cracking up. Okay, and everyone calms down. It goes down about 10 levels immediately. If you fight like this, say my spouse is over there. Well, our rooms aren't that big, but say my spouse is over there and I'm over here and I'm standing there like this. Yeah, what do you want? Okay, fine. What do you want to talk about? It's going to be a fight. If we're sitting down on a couch together or we're sitting down and we're going to talk about it, you do not fight in the bedroom. No fighting in the bedroom. But if you're sitting on a couch together and you're holding hands and you're looking at each other, then I'm not going to be taking that attitude. Okay, so it's very important to remember to do that. Next one that you might laugh at. Pick an appropriate time to fight. What does that mean? Fights never happen at convenient times. Fights don't happen when we're quiet and relaxed and having a little pillow talk or having a nice little discussion. Fights happen when you're trying to get four kids out to school, everyone's late for work, or my favorite, there's a plane to catch, nobody's ready on time, we're not going to get to the airport on time, even though we need to get to the airport 4 hours before. I don't really understand why, but okay. But the point is that those are the stressful times when people fight, okay? That is the worst time for a fight. That is not when you want to fight. So you want to say to the other person, to your spouse, I am very upset about what just happened. But clearly this is not a good time for us to have this discussion. I'm asking you if we could please, or I'm telling you, it depends on your relationship. I'm telling you, I'm asking you that we need to discuss this later. Please make time for this discussion at some point today. And some couples have a schedule time. So if there's an argument to have, it's when the kids go to bed or at 9:30 to 10 o'clock at night or whatever it is. But it's not at that moment. Because at that moment, all you're going to do is yell and scream. And you pick an appropriate time. And couples look at me and say, you want me to schedule my fights? And I'm like, yes. I want you to schedule your fights so that it's not a screaming match. I want you to schedule it so it's a discussion. Yes.
Your point sort of begs the observation that there are what I would call process fights and there are ideological fights.
Uh-huh.
There's fighting because of the stress of life, mm-hmm. where the fight is really just a manifestation of stress. And then there's fighting because there's something that's, you know, I don't like that you've done this, or mm-hmm. why are you doing that, or why am I, you know, not... There's more sort of stuff.
Correct.
Fighting. So if the fighting is the, which I suspect for most of us, a lot of it is the stress of life fight, how does, since it's all of the moment, right, you're in that moment, you're in the getting to the airport, you're in the bundling, the, you mm-hmm. know, how do you handle that other than to just sort of see it for what it is and try not to enter it?
So part of what happens, it's an excellent question, part of what happens is when you say, I'm really angry about what's going on right now, but we obviously can't talk about it now because it's not going to accomplish anything. We need to talk about it later. Usually those moment fights, at some point later, you both just come back and say, you know what, that was so silly. I'm sorry, I was just stressed out about the airport. And you know, I love you, we're fine. They usually don't turn into big discussion. A lot of the rules end up being the more ideological fights. But if you had stuck with that fight at that moment, that would have turned into, and your mother's stupid, and you can't do anything, and you never pick up your socks, and blah, da 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 da. As opposed to, we're stressed because we're late for the airport. If you stop it, and you say, we're going to continue it later, because if you just say to your spouse, we're late for the airport, this is not the time to discuss this, then you become the retreater, and she becomes the vomiter, mm-hmm. okay? And she's going to hound you the entire ride to the airport. But we need to talk about this. How can we not talk about it? Do you realize what you said to me? Do you understand what this was about? But if you say, I don't want to talk about it now, or she'll say, I don't think we should talk about this now, but we're going to schedule time later, it validates the feelings. It acknowledges that there was something hurtful going on. And usually most normal couples at some point during the day will just apologize to each other and it'll be done. Or they will talk about it later. And I'll tell you the technique to do that. Okay, but the ideological fights are the ones where you need to sit down and really hash it out. And I'm going to talk more about that. Okay, hopefully I don't even have to say this, but usually when I say that, I have to say it, is that fighting should not be done in front of your children. Okay, it is so detrimental to children. And I have parents who say to me all the time, oh, but it's good for the kids to know that we fight and we make up and da da da. It's not good for kids to know you fight. I didn't say you can't have a disagreement in front of your children. I'm not saying that once you know the fair fighting techniques, your children can't see you sitting on a couch together and having a discussion back and forth, even if you disagree. But screaming and fighting shouldn't be done in front of the children. And I have to tell you, if you think your kids are sleeping in the car when you're fighting, they're not. And if you think they can't hear you from their bedrooms, they can. And children hear and see and know everything. Okay? You need to really understand and be careful about what that is. And I say to people, if you really need to have a fight, get out of the house together and go have your fight. But don't think that they're not hearing you. Okay.
But isn't that a corollary of a larger rule, which is fight privately, not in public?
Yes. But in other words, people think that when the kids are sleeping in the back seat of the car and they're on a long drive home from somewhere... but people don't consider that. I'm very glad you do.
Okay.
People don't consider that that's public. That they consider that's private. By the same token, I don't think you have to have it in the middle of the grocery store either, even if the kids aren't around. But no, I think that people need to go somewhere private and have their fight. And I also hope that people don't have to fight so much when they know how to fight. Okay. Next one. Stick to one issue. This is probably the hardest rule of fair fighting, is sticking to one issue. If you're going to always bring up 15 other issues, your spouse will never trust to talk to you about the issue at hand, because they always know and feel that you're going to bring up 14 other things. So you have to stick to one issue. And also, you'll never resolve the actual problem that you want to resolve, because you're going to go off on so many different tangents that it just doesn't happen. So if you're fighting with a spouse about leaving dirty clothes on the floor, don't talk about his mother or her mother coming for a visit. Okay? They don't have anything to do with each other, and you're never going to solve anything. And then your spouse will never trust you to have these discussions. Next, complain about behaviors, not about people. We all know how to do that with parenting, right? We're all taught to say, you're not a bad boy. What you did was the wrong thing. You're not a bad girl. What you did was the wrong thing. Well, we don't learn to do that with our spouses. Okay? So instead of complaining about, I don't like what you did, I hate you, I this you, even if I'm using the I statements, right? You can still destroy a person with the I statements. Okay? I can't stand you. That's not about the behaviors. So complain about behaviors, not about the person. And the person will be able to hear you if you do that. Number 6, guard your tongue. Now, this is so difficult, especially for some of us who, I'm the screamer in the family. I'm the yeller in the family. In fact, I remember when my oldest son was little, and he said to me, I said one day, I have such a headache. And he said to me, you know, Mommy, you probably wouldn't have so many headaches if you didn't scream so much. Thank you. But you need to, the screamers have a harder time avoiding the guarding your tongue piece. Avoid name calling, blaming, okay? After somebody's been attacked, they can't listen anymore. So if they've been called names or they've been blamed for everything that ever happened since the beginning of time, they're not going to listen anymore. No swearing and no threatening, okay? I tell couples all the time, divorce does not belong in any, the word divorce doesn't belong in a fight. The word, the threatening, I'm going to cancel your credit cards. I'm going to take away this. I'm going to do that. Whatever couples, the crazy things that couples come up with. And that also includes not threatening, well, you're never going to get sex again until we figure this out. Or it'll be a cold day and you know what before you ever, you know, get into my bed again. That those kind of that doesn't work. And couples do this all the time. And that's not how one should fight. Also, very important, take a break from the fighting if you need to. We give kids timeouts. We all know that giving a timeout works for children. But we don't take timeouts when we need it. And when you're fighting, chances are you need a timeout. There's only so long you can sit on that couch and look at into each other's eyes and be talking to each other about your feelings and stay calm. Okay? So if you feel like you're escalating, or if you see your spouse has that deer in the headlights look and they're no longer really listening to what you're saying, you need to schedule and suggest a timeout. Let's go get a drink. I don't mean an alcoholic drink, like a drink from the refrigerator. Splash your face with water. Take a walk around the block. For some people, it's going out and getting a smoke. Whatever it is, take that break and come back to it. Don't try to stick with it. Now, usually the vomiter in the relationship doesn't want the retreater to go and take the break. Okay? So you both have to agree that it's okay to take the break and that you'll be back. Because that way the vomiter is not running after the retreater and saying, oh, what time are we going to meet back? Are we sure we're going to discuss it? Because I can't go to sleep without discussing it. And again, that is not gender specific. Because really, I see both genders being the vomiter. Sometimes it seems like people think it's always the woman who's the vomiter, but it's not. Separate feelings from problem solving. And that's also very important. When we fight, we tend to think we need solutions. And really what most people need when they fight is just to be heard. They need to be heard and they need to be validated. So we don't solve anything in the beginning when we fair fight. We just validate each other's feelings. Problem solving can come later. And usually problem solving comes by itself if everybody feels calm and feels heard. Now, I'm just curious by a show of hands. How many people do these things already in their relationship?
Sure. Do the wrong things or right things?
No, the right
things. The right things, hopefully. There's some of both.
The right things.
Some of them.
Some of them. Some of them. A lot. Most of them?
I'm pretty good. We're pretty good. I'm pretty good. With
okay.
This.
She knows everything about sex and kids. Good. You're good. At you don't have to bring in speakers next time.
You met
time.
My wife.
What do you think?
I think that most successful marriages have a running issue, or maybe more 100%. Than one issue. And so, for us, it's not susceptible of solving because it's part of who we are.
Mm-hmm.
In our marriage, it is time management. For example, we have
in many marriages,
right? It's time management, and it will never change. So, it's sort of like you know it when you see it. And the key is to not make more of it when it inevitably rears its head, which is every hour on that.
If you look.
You know, so, I mean, the challenge has been to sort of see it for what it is.
Right.
Recognize that it is not susceptible of solution. You know, it's sort of, and then keep it within a bounds of, you know, so that it doesn't go nuclear.
Okay.
No, I agree with Doug tremendously. I think a big part of this is we all have our issues,
mm-hmm.
and we always will have our issues. And if you really have a great relationship, you accept that person for the issues they've got. And also, the biggest thing we've learned is you don't take things personally. Don't take things personally. If they say something or do something, don't take it personally. It's because someone's aggravated, okay, they're aggravated, and you move on. But that's been the biggest thing in our entire family's life, is when something happens, there's an initial reaction to say, you know, it's though you're being attacked, but you know what? It's not really a personal issue. So that's been a very good thing.
Are they for real?
I'm not sure. You gotta
go through your battles to get your victories, you know.
No, but I think there's a lot of truth.
100%, you're right.
Yeah.
It's sort of like getting below the surface. What's really going on? There's a lot of lashing
Correct.
Out, but it's like sort of like, what's this really about?
And the whole point is when we de-escalate the fighting,
right.
you can actually hear what's really going on. And a lot of times there's fear or there's frustration. And if you don't have the opportunity to be able to voice it and know that someone's actually going to listen and say, I hear what you're saying. What I think I hear you saying is da-da-da-da-da-da-da and validate your feelings, then you never get to that point. And you can never get to the point where you don't take each other seriously in that way. And you let it roll off. You know, I say to couples all the time, you know, just pretend you have Vaseline on you. Just let it roll off. And they'll say, I can't. And when they say, I can't, I say, okay, either you're being stubborn or you haven't been heard. It's one of two things. So let's figure out which it is. Okay, but that's the truth. Go ahead.
This all sounds wonderful. However,
it really works, by the way. If you do it, it really works.
Well, here's
Go ahead.
The thing. Fighting is an emotion, in my mind, is an emotional thing. So if you have the clarity to be able to do all of these things, you're not really fighting. You're having a disagreement about an issue.
Correct.
So fighting, however, is when you really don't have the clarity of mind or control to be able to be very rational. So,
but I don't think this is about rational. This
oh, I
is
think
about
it's all rational. It's okay. They're wonderful tips. Don't get me wrong.
No. But I want to respectfully disagree because it's really about having deep emotional caring.
Yeah, it's very emotional.
It's not rational. It's really about having your emotional needs met. In other words, fighting. The reason we call fair fighting is because if I went around talking about we're not going to have fighting in marriage anymore, I'd be laughed out of places. Okay. But in reality, we don't, if people really who practice this don't fight in their marriage as we think of fighting. They have disagreements, they have discussions, but there's no more fighting. It's not about a power struggle anymore. Fighting is about a power struggle. Who's going to win? One of us has to be right and one of us has to be wrong. Who's going to win? And it's strategic almost. And sometimes it's just stamina, who can last longer. Sometimes it's who can destroy the other person first. This is about deep emotional connection. This is about feeling you can really trust that other person to hear you and to give you a respectful response and to not have to attack when something happens that frustrates them, but to be able to say at some point, I'm feeling really frustrated right now. Like, we have a code word in our house. When my husband and I come home from work, because it used to be that we would get home from a hard day of work, and right away when the other person would say, hi, how are you, or did you take care of this today, it would be an attack. Why? Because I'm tired or he's tired, and it's just frustration. It's frustration. But it ends up turning into a fight. And this was very early on in our marriage. And we decided we need to come up with some kind of a key word that if one of us walks into the house and we're feeling that frustration, we say that key word. And that means give that person some space. Okay? So we came up with the word when we walk in the door and say to each other, how was your day? If it was not a good day, we say peachy. Okay? And my kids have picked up on it because I'll say, how was your day at school? Peachy, leave me alone, you know? But the reality is when we do that and we give each other that space, I have to tell you, to me, there is nothing more emotionally loving than being given that space. Because I know that even though, and the problem is he's better at asking back. Like, even if he'll walk in the door and I'll say, how was your day? And he goes, peachy. And I'll say, oh, I'm really sorry, and back away. He'll always remember to say, and how was your day? I'm not so nice. Okay, so when I say peachy and he backs away, I don't say anything, you know. And that's something we've had to discuss, but it wasn't a fight. It's a deep emotional connection because that person gets it and cares and knows that I need a break, or I know that he needs a break. And we've done it with our kids, and they feel very validated and respected because of it.
We're saying two different things.
Okay, tell me again what you're saying.
I believe that everyone, I mean, if you're married and you want it to work, you have this emotional commitment and desire to make it work. But
that's a tremendous given.
Assumption.
Assumption, that's right. The word, right. Thank you.
No, I agree.
Okay.
But let's say that is the given.
Okay.
So there's that foundation, that rock that's there. But on top of that is what you were speaking about before, the daily stuff.
Right.
It gets to each of us because we're human and we're stressed.
Correct.
And we're tired and this and that and the other thing. So that wears away at your ability to be able to think, to say the I, or to say, you know what, I need a timeout, or whatever the tips are. So what I'm struggling with is that it's not accepting the fact that we are human and that we don't always have that kind of control or consideration. And you have to have a presence of mind to be able to do that. And when you're in a fight, which to me is an emotional state that is distinct,
correct,
from this foundation that, yes, I want this nice relationship, et cetera, that there's this emotional state that one gets in that is just difficult to have that presence of mind to be able to do that. And I think also I believe there is, like what you said, if you walked in and said, we're going to eliminate fighting for marriages, people would laugh at you. I think that there is a place, an appropriate place, for letting that stress out, that it's not always so controlled. Like the way you're positioning it to me is, I have the presence of mind 24/7 to be able to sort of capture this. And I don't think that's really realistic.
Okay, so I hear that. Hold on, go ahead.
No, I understand what you're saying. I really do, and I really think, well, again, things work differently for different people, but the thing that I'm hearing is a lot of stuff starts to build up, and it's continual. But I pose to you that what's worked for us is that most of the times, if you can realize it's a personal thing, you're taking it personally, in a certain way, if you can say, you know what, I'm just going to just let it go. I'm not going to take it personally. It's not about me. It's just life. These are life things. It happens. That's how I see it. And if once you get to that concept of not taking things personally and letting them build up, you just let it go. And it's just it's calming. It's very calming.
Okay. Go ahead.
I have a difference of opinion with my peachy friend. It is personal. In a marriage, you bet it's personal. It doesn't get more personal than that. I mean, this is somebody that knows you intimately, I hope. And then, you know, you step back. So you're going through the emotional battle. And I'll speak personally. I didn't think that Malika and I would... I didn't know how it was going to work out until I knew that we could actually have a fight and get through it and keep going. And we're both very stubborn and we're both very hot-headed. So we got through that. So the thing is, like with children or in certain situations that are emotional, I think we all have the capability of being emotional, being very much involved in it, but also having this other level, it's called metacognition in the pedagogy field, of stepping back and watching yourself as you're doing it, being emotional, still being emotional, but then bringing in these rules and trying to employ them. So you haven't given up the emotional. It's still personal, and you're still very much involved in it, but now this other level is coming down and starting to balance the emotion a little bit. I mean, easy to say, hard to do.
Right.
Well, what I was going to say is that this is a culmination of a process. In other words, the tips are there to practice. It doesn't happen right away the first time.
Right.
And it is a process. I feel that emotion can be there in a positive or in a negative. And again, I am a person, I love to scream. I'm a passionate person. I love to do it. But the reality is that my husband was such a retreater that he was just not even talking. And I was having monologues. And it was not accomplishing anything. I was getting more frustrated. Once I realized that there was a way to do this where we could both be heard and he didn't have to be afraid of me and afraid of my passion, then all of a sudden, yeah, I still am that same person. And I'm still going to be quicker to anger than before. But for example, because of this, and I guess in a way it is what you're saying, you do take things less personally, even though it is personal. But for example, this morning when the GPS didn't want to take me to the right place, and I realized it's because I had programmed in the GPS on Friday afternoon, and I didn't realize one of the kids took the car last night, put something else in, and, you know, and the GPS was taking me there. Right, the GPS was taking me there, and thank God it was an okay place, but the point is it wasn't here. I called my husband, and in the past I would have been like, what am I going to do? And instead I really was able to say, I'm really, really frustrated. I said it in an intense tone. I'm really frustrated, and I don't want you to do anything about it. Don't fix it. I just need to talk to you about it. And that's something that it would have turned into a fight before. It would have turned into a fight.
And that's a classic example. That's exactly what I'm trying to say. Typically, and I'll back up because we went through all these arguments and everything, but that's a classic example where in the past, I would say, why did they do that to me?
Right.
I mean, think about that.
No, why even better. Why did you not know that they did it?
I would take it personally and get aggravated.
3 minutes, because I just want to bring everyone together. And
they're not doing it to me. It happened.
It's 11:04, but I want to bring everyone together for a half hour, not to lose
the bill that you get.
Okay.
So maybe just okay. in five minutes.
Okay.
I have one question.
Go ahead.
Before I forget. The Torah has everything. So I've been told.
Mm-hmm.
By my esteemed rabbi. Esteemed rabbit. And
I agree.
Where in the Torah does it cover this? The Torah is the roadmap for our lives.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know where in the Torah it talks about arguing, fighting, solving fights, and things like that. Please.
Well, the first thing I always joke about is look at Abraham and Sarah, and what did God say? Listen to Sarah.
I'm not quite sure I go for that one.
I thought you were already in trouble.
You asked. You see, that's the problem. Don't ask.
Don't ask a question unless you know the answer.
There are,
again, the Bible is full of dysfunctional families.
Oh yeah, I mean,
kill and
right,
and separate,
right. I mean, my sibling. I do a whole workshop on sibling rivalry based on, you know, the Book of Genesis and Bereshit, and it's great. I mean, that's what it is. I always say the Book of Bereshit, the first book of the Torah, is our first psychology book. Everything about family relationships is in there. You can find it all, and we take it from there. And if you look at, you know, the relationships between our forefathers and our mothers, that there were certain dynamics that are very important. Again, it's not, that's a whole different lecture, but there are dynamics there that are very important, and take into account that respectful speaker listener, that validating of feelings, that trying to listen to the other person, being, you know, taking their needs into account. It's all in there. It's all in there.
But it's not. I respectfully disagree.
Okay.
Go ahead. How is taking into account Hagar's feelings and separation and exiling her? I mean, you know, there are all sorts of arguments. Say, okay, you're out of here, breaking up a relationship. I think Steve's point is really well taken. There's maybe a lot of negative things or dysfunction that you can see in the Torah, but it's very difficult to see positive.
Okay.
I would pose the positives in there. I just, maybe this is just a suggestion.
Go ahead.
Not that I, you know, you're the expert, I'm not.
Go ahead.
But in the future, it might be interesting to have one or two stories that from the Torah that would be a part of this. I would get a kick out of that.
Okay, so that, can I be totally blunt?
Yes.
I have a whole part in this lecture
about
the Torah, and I was told very clearly, you know, don't come across as like some frummy therapist when you walk in there, Rachel. You know, be very professional, be very real, and this is about psychology
great
today.
Advice. Well, great
so
advice.
So that's why.
That's good advice. That was good advice.
So, okay, so that's why.
But it's there. You have that too.
100%.
Good.
100%. Even
I'd buy that, and I believe it.
Okay, so the dynamic is there.
Good.
That absolutely, and you are absolutely right that there were dysfunctional relationships and functional relationships. Okay, but there are functional relationships, and there are lessons to be learned from each couple that we see brought out, and that's the reason that the couple relationships are brought out, is that we are learning from them, and that there's a tremendous amount that we learn from them. But you know, again, there's so much. You know, when I talk to young couples about what to look for in marriage, I always present to them, you know, would you be interested in this guy? I talk to groups of girls, you know, in their early 20s on college campuses, and I talk to them about what to look for in a marriage and how not to be caught in an abusive marriage and things like that. And I always present to them and say, would you be interested in this guy? Would you be interested in this guy? Would you be interested in this guy? And I give them the dynamics of who those people were. And when everyone's like, no, no, and I'm like, okay, that was Jacob, and that was Joseph, and that was Moses, and that was, you know, because everybody has their human traits, and there's positive and negatives to learn. But there are positives in couples from especially the early, you know, the couples in Bereishit. So, you know, definitely there, it's there. Okay. There's so much more to get to, but I just want to go quickly through the don'ts. Okay. Okay. You're going to read the handouts and you're going to be able to know the don'ts. The don'ts are very clear. One more do. When you have a fight or a discussion, know what you want from it. Don't go into it thinking, I never want this to happen again. That's not a goal for a fight. If you have a goal for a fight, I do not want my spouse to do this action again, or I want my spouse to understand that this action is very hurtful to me, that's a goal for a fight. And when you go into fighting, fair fighting, with clear goals, you're able to achieve and move on, as opposed to we revisit it again and again and again and again. Damn, it's so much fun up there. I don't know.
I have a feeling Mitch might have showed up.
I'm not even asking. Okay, so, and last but not least, you try to end a fight on a positive note, meaning remembering to say I love you, meaning even if you're still upset, it's okay to say I'm still hurt, but I know that I love you and we're going to keep working at this, giving each other a kiss and a hug, trying to say thank you for having the fight with the person. And I know that this sounds weird, and when I present it to couples, it always, you know, people will look at me like I'm nuts. I promise you it works. It really does. It takes perseverance and it takes work. And that's part of what marriage is too. It's easy to fight. Fighting isn't hard. Fighting in the right way and not destroying each other is much harder.
But you didn't use the magic words. The two magic words of...
What, jewelry and...
Sorry.
We didn't...
Sorry.
Okay, so one of the things, you know, that whole love that means never having to say I'm sorry.
That's a marriage that would last a month and a half.
So I have to tell you I disagree. And I have to just say that when I speak to groups of women all the time and groups of men separately, both say, I'm sorry are very empty words. I need to see action. If you say I'm sorry over and over and over again and keep doing the same thing, it doesn't really mean the same. It doesn't mean it.
No, but you have to tie it to something.
Hold on
I'm
one second.
I'm sorry if I hurt Hold your on. Feelings. I'm sorry if I didn't
a mistake.
Hear you. And
correct. So what I wanted to say is when you I'm going to give you the hands out. When you look at the speaker-listener technique, that part of validating the person and part of what the firefighting is about is saying, I hear what you're saying. I paraphrase what I heard, and I'm sorry that you were made to feel that way. Okay? So that's part of it. But just, I'm sorry, I have learned in working with couples for so long, is really usually a frustrating experience. Because the one spouse will say, I said I'm sorry, what's the problem? And the other spouse will say, well, sorry just doesn't do anything if there are no actions with it. When you're actually validating what the person says, then it actually means something. Okay.
That's Isaiah's contempt for bringing a sin.